Welcome to episode 13 of Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod and I'm here with Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Duncan.
So you're jetting off to Switzerland in a few hours. Tell us what you're going to be doing there.
Well, I'm going to see something very exciting. It's the Particle Accelerator built under basically three countries, Switzerland, France and Germany, I think. If I'm not mistaken.
I think that's right, yeah. I'm very jealous.
As you should be. It's quite exciting work that they're doing there, trying to find alternate universes and things like that, which is something that I'm very interested in, particle physics and the like. So I'm very excited.
Great. Well, I look forward to the articles that you bring back from that. You're also going over there to talk to Intel about some of their cloud computing initiatives. So.
Yeah, so we'll have some interesting stuff coming out of there, hopefully live while we're out there.
Great. Well, I'll look forward to it. Good. We have a few giveaways in this week's podcast. We'll give you a bit of detail towards the end of the show about how to win them. But we're giving away two book copies of Gus Silber's new book, Ronnie Uptaker's Funny Business, The Secrets of an Accidental Entrepreneur. Gus Silber, I think many of you know through Twitter, one of the funniest writers in journalism in South Africa today. And he's written a book about Ronnie Uptaker, who I think most people know as the founder of Internet Solutions, one of the country's most successful early internet companies. Ronnie, famous for not only starting Internet Solutions, but also making a number of movies involved in funding and directing and producing a number of fairly well-known movies over the years. So it looks like a fascinating read. I've just finished the first chapter. I haven't read the whole book yet, so I can't provide a critique at this stage, although I look for a review on Tech Central sometime over the next couple of weeks. But if you'd like to win that, stay tuned, and we'll provide details of that later in the show.
Well, I've been reading it as well, and I'm about halfway through. I can't put it down. I'm having an absolute blast through it. It's a really great read.
Excellent. Good. That's not the only thing we're giving away this week. In fact, we have a built
laptop
sleeve, 17-inch laptop sleeve, courtesy of Blue Label Telecoms, which we're giving away as well. So if you've got a laptop 15 or 17-inch, I think we'll fit this thing nicely. Stay tuned and we'll give the details of how to win that as well. But let's get on to this week's news, and there's certainly been plenty over the last week. I think let's start with the latest first in the news just this morning, Monday morning, that MWeb has been hacked, and over almost 3,000 of its customers' DSL login details have been published on the web, which is a bit of a worrying development.
It is rather specifically concerning, the number of customers that were exposed, and also because last week Hatzner had a similar problem. The hosting business that hosts a lot of local websites also was hacked. So it looks like some sort of a spree going on, which is quite scary. Mm.
I spoke to Rudy Jansen, the CEO of MWeb, a bit earlier this morning, and he was saying to me that it's only about 1,000 or so people who have been affected. It's only people who are still using the Internet Solutions network backbone and haven't been cut across yet to MWeb's own Internet backbone network that are affected. But still 1,000 people with their password details and login details out there is a bit worrying. And some big-name companies that have been associated with this as well, including Pumalela Gaming, Pinnacle Micro, and a few other household names in South Africa. So it is a bit concerning that this information was sitting in plain text format, perhaps on a server. There needs to be a little bit of a review of how this information is stored.
Well, I should certainly hope so. That this kind of thing, it happens, and we know it happens, and it's happened to bigger companies than MWeb. But unfortunately, it really is a big wake up call that security needs to be tightened.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hopefully, I mean, 1,000 customers, I suppose, is not as bad as having their entire customer base details leaked onto the web. But it is a wake-up, that not just for MWeb, but for other internet service providers, that they need to take security very seriously indeed.
Absolutely.
Good. I think we're going to be spending quite a portion of this podcast this week talking about Zentech, just because of the fact that there has been so much news flow on that front, and a lot of that news flow on Tech Central. But before we get there, I think, and it's related, I'd like to ask Candace, you've been looking this morning, in fact, into some issues around spectrum trading and some new regulations that ICASA is finalizing that will, in fact, allow the kind of spectrum trading that we saw taking place between Zentech and Screamer Telecoms in this rather controversial deal that's seen Screamer using Centex allocation in the 2.6 gigahertz band to provide WiMAX services. But before we get on to that, just tell us a bit about these new regulations that are coming out.
Well, we briefly mentioned it in last week's podcast, but I've only really got down to getting through that really massive document over the last couple of days. And it's quite an interesting set of regulations. There's a lot of changes, but basically they cover a broad range of spectrum. So it's not just the scarce spectrum in the 2.6 and 3.5 gigahertz bands. But this specific issue around spectrum trading has long been a sort of technically unlawful in South Africa, primarily because the licensing stipulations and because of the Electronic Communications Act. But the regulations that ICASA recently published will actually allow and has a stipulation section stipulating that companies will be allowed to trade the spectrum that they buy or win off auction from ICASA. And it includes the scarce spectrum in the 2.6 and obviously 3.5 gigahertz bands. What will happen now is that companies, well, if these regulations are finalized and put through, companies will be allowed to bid in auction for spectrum and then allowed to resell it or lease it to another company that doesn't have the spectrum license, but they won't be allowed to make profit from it. So basically, they're allowed to lease it up to the point where they've paid off the license fee that they paid or the amount that they paid in auction for it. So that's quite an interesting development, and it will make a deal similar to the one that we are seeing coming out of Centec with Screamer, which is now passed, but this kind of deal will be allowed in the future.
Interestingly, in your article this morning, you mentioned that there will be a price limit set on the sort of spectrum trading. So the company that the company that wants to trade the spectrum may not charge more than the amount that they paid for the licensed spectrum in the first place from ICASA?
In the auction process, yes.
Okay. So the effect of that really will be to stop massive spikes in the value of spectrum, I guess.
Well, that's just it. So companies can't go off and bid huge amounts for spectrum and then charge through the nose for it to lease it to someone else.
Yes, which will probably actually put a dampener on the spectrum trading market, because if a company isn't able to generate more revenue than the amount that they've had to pay for that license in the first place, it's going to make them much less likely to want to share it.
Well, that's just it. The idea is for companies that want spectrum to go out for it. I think what the kind of idea it's looking at is possibly a rent to buy situation. So you pay for the spectrum and you lease it out until you can afford to blow out the network. So, you know, it will see a lot of spectrum becoming accessible where it wasn't before, for those companies that have already got spectrum licenses in certain bands. But we'll see how it works out, and whether or not it actually comes through is another story, since the regulations are still in draft.
Yes. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the Screamer Telecom story, because we broke some big news on Thursday last week, and then our friends at the Mail and Guardian also published some interesting information on the same subject. But Screamer Telecoms, and there's been quite a lot of talk about this deal over the years and what it entails, but the details are finally starting to emerge about how Centec allowed Screamer Telecoms, formerly GWI or Global Web Intact, to use a portion, 10 megahertz of their 50 megahertz allocation in the 2.6 gigahertz band to provide WiMAX services. The chairman of Centec, Karash Patel, who I've interviewed on two occasions now about this subject, indicated to me that the transaction was unlawful, and then in fact Screamer Telecoms' executives approached Centec's chairman just I think about a month ago now, 6 weeks ago, asking them to renew this contract, which had expired back in January, and he said under no circumstances am I going to be renewing this contract. The suggestions are that this was a dodgy deal. Both the Mail and Guardian and ourselves have uncovered that Eddie Fundy, politically well-connected former chairman of the SABC and now ambassador to Germany, may have benefited financially from this transaction. In fact, Eddie Fundy, as far as we can tell, was close friends with both the former late communications minister, Ivy Matsepeka Saburi, and Sebeletso Mokone Matabane, the former chief executive of Centec. Apparently, both Ivy Matsepeka Saburi and her former director general, Lindelshope Mafole, who is now a member of parliament for COPE, both knew that this transaction was taking place and gave it their tacit support. So there are a lot of questions here that still need to be answered as to how this deal came about, why apparently Centec's CEO was giving doing business deals with her politically well-connected friends, both with the support of her mates in government, Ivy Matsepe-Kasapuri and Ndlovu Mafole. I think it's fairly well known that both Mokone Matabane and Matsepe-Kasapuri were lifelong friends. And anyway, a lot of questions still around this deal, and we're going to continue probing it, as I am sure the Mail and Guardian will as well. So, interesting. We're going to keep a close watch on that story and developments there. But it's not the only story coming out of Centec this week. We've also ascertained and have the court papers here showing that LTEC UEC, the big LTEC subsidiary that makes set-top boxes and decoders for the likes of MultiChoice and a range of markets outside South Africa, including India, is suing Centec, asking for encryption keys, or asking Centec to provide it with encryption keys so it can finish the construction, or the manufacture rather, of up to 70,000 set-top boxes which Centec apparently ordered from it. We've got copies of the purchase orders which Centec sent through to the UEC, and it appears that the new management team at Centec had a change of heart about whether this deal should go ahead at all. And they are now disputing whether a contract in fact existed or even exists. And the new chairman of Centec is saying that they're not going to provide these encryption keys, which UEC needs to finish the job, because there was no contract at all between the two parties. And he says that he's going to fight the matter in court. So it could get quite ugly. We're talking about, LTEC claims to have spent in the region of something like 35 million rand on building these decoders. Centec is saying, "Well, you should have signed a contract with us, basically."
Well, technically, they should have. I understand that there is some sort of contractual agreement, but I also understand that it may not have been signed. I don't know, Duncan. You've been dealing with these documents quite extensively, so.
Yeah, I don't know what legally a judge is going to find. I mean, the fact is that they did send through purchase orders with details of the equipment that they wanted, and they sent emails to UEC saying, please start with the manufacture of these decoders urgently. Legally, there was no contract in place, it appears. I don't know what a judge is going to find, given that there were those purchase orders.
Well, I suppose that is particularly binding, especially if you send through an order. I mean, it's going to be a tough case, and one definitely to watch.
Definitely. It's being heard in the Pietermaritzburg High Court. And we'll be following that one closely when it eventually comes to trial. But unfortunately, the speed at which law works in this country, it's probably going to be a while before that case is heard.
But it's definitely a case that Centec can ill afford at the moment.
Indeed. I mean, they're facing an endless list of problems at the moment. The Screamer deal, the LTEC UEC issue, just the surface of a whole long list of allegations of corruption and misappropriation of funds and all sorts of things that have been happening there. But they're about to get a new CEO. We, in fact, revealed exclusively on Tech Central this week. My political sources inside government told me that Satuma Mohapi, a former telecom executive who's also worked at Internet Solutions and Neotel and other companies, has been appointed as the new CEO, or rather the board of Centec has made the recommendation that Satuma Mohapi be appointed as the CEO, and the Minister of Communications, Sipiwe Nyanda, has apparently agreed and will put this to cabinet later this month, I think the 27th of October, and it looks highly likely that Mr. Mohapi will get the job. Though he hasn't named him, Koresh Patel, the chairman of Centec, did tell me that the candidate who they have identified, he's very, very pleased with and believes that he's the right person to turn around Centec. But I guess we'll watch the space and find out. I'm hoping to have lunch with Mohapi when he is appointed in the next couple of weeks.
Should be an interesting interview.
Should be indeed. I think that's about all we needed to say about Centec. So I think let's, Candice, take an ad break at that point. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome aboard Voxair Teleconferencing, where you can enjoy first-class service at a fraction of the cost, without the wait or the jet lag. Just an automated, hassle-free way to connect with people wherever they are, and all the legroom you need. It's like being there without the hassle of getting there. So why travel for business when you can simply teleconference? Call 01-0001-0001 or visit voxair.co.za. Voxair Teleconferencing from Vox.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. So, Candace, last days for Didata on the JSE?
Yeah, tomorrow they—that's Tuesday—they will suspend their shares on the JSE, bringing to a head its the first steps of its delisting process, which should be completed by the end of the month. 1st of November is the deadline for the company's shareholders to accept the buyback offer from Nippon Telegraph. The Japanese business buying it out. It's sort of an end of an era, isn't it?
It is the end of an era. I mean, for so long, Didata has been the biggest IT company on the JSE by market value, and they've probably had that position for at least 20 years.
And by far, it's possibly the largest largest cap by double almost to the next biggest business, which is
Datatec. Yeah.
Well, I suppose all eyes will now turn to Datatec as the largest IT cap on the stock. So we'll see what happens there.
As far as I remember, Didata was one of those listings back in 1987, the famous year of the market crash, I think they listed that year, and they in the middle of that market turmoil. Then they obviously went through a second period of market instability around 2000 when they also happened to list on the London Stock Exchange. They moved their primary listing from Johannesburg to London.
I think that was when their share price locally dropped down to about 2 rand.
Yeah, once it was 1 rand 70 at its low. I was actually a shareholder at the time. I had bought in at 10 rand and watched it fall all the way to 1 rand 70. It was quite unpleasant. I managed to get out a bit later at about 8 rand. I should have hung on, of course, because they're around 14 rand now with the offer on the table from ATT. That share price hit a peak of, I think, 75 rand back in 2000 before plunging all the way down to 1 rand 70. I'm very glad I wasn't one of the people who bought at 75 bucks.
Yeah, well, I'm luckily not playing in the market at the moment, so haven't been hit by any of those things. But definitely, definitely a sad moment in the tech industry to see Didata move on to, I suppose, newer and greener pastures.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like they're disappearing. They're still going to be up the road here at the campus, and we'll still interface with the guys. But we'll be dealing with them less from a financial perspective, and dealing them less with Jeremy and the boys into the future.
Well, good luck to them. I think it's a great deal, and it's really encouraging to see international investment in the country.
So. And Didata really is a changed company from 10 years ago. They're a really professionally run outfit now. Perhaps 10 years ago, they were perhaps a little bit more fly by the seat of your pants type of operation. But under Brett Dawson and under the leadership of Jeremy Ord as well, they've really built a solid business there. And I guess it's that sort of strong business underpinning that attracted the NTT guys to them.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So our friend Mamadupi Motlala, the former Director General in the Department of Communications, has finally got a new job.
Indeed she has. She has been appointed head of the National Consumer Commission, which will basically be the regulator running the CPA, the Consumer Protection Act. Sort of implementing it. It's the ICASA of the general industry, looking at taking complaints and enforcing the law and making sure that companies are complying with this very, very complex law that's coming into play fully in March next year. And she's quite excited about it. She's been looking, obviously, for something that underpins her skills has been looking for now almost 4 months. Well, they have been looking for 4 months to find her a position.
It's not her first exposure to regulation. I mean, she was previously the pension funds adjudicator, and before that she was at ICASA, where she famously produced these very poor ATSL regulations.
Her stint at ICASA wasn't exactly a shining one. She did leave in something of a cloud after she was accused of moonlighting doing legal work for possibly mobile operators after hours while working at the regulator. So that was never proved, and I think she was actually cleared of the charges. But she did leave the ICASA then.
Okay. But her background, she's got a lot of background in regulation, especially from her days as pension funds adjudicator. So she has some experience in that regard.
Absolutely, and as a trained lawyer, she's perfectly placed to actually run this shift, I think.
Although I was on air with David Gleason on Classic FM last week, and we were talking about the Consumer Protection Act, and it strikes me as a bit worrying. It seems that there's a lot of red tape here, and you know, businesses are really complaining about the amount of red tape that they have to deal with in terms of regulation in South Africa. Do we really need the CPA? Do we need all this additional red tape imposed on business?
Well, the idea of the CPA is to bring South African businesses to a point where they're much more transparent. The problem is that there are a lot of laws that are very vague and very general, and as such, on top of the law, there's been a set of regulations drafted which also govern certain aspects of business, and it affects every business. I think even our industry, the telecom space in general, will be affected, and quite heavily as well, although not as heavily as the food producers, who will be hit quite in the face of this one.
Yes, I was reading that you can't say 98% fat-free anymore. You have to say 2% fat.
You can't say cheese snacks anymore because they don't contain cheese.
Cheese snacks don't contain cheese? What are you telling me?
That your balanced diet is not so balanced after all.
Well, I know McDonald's burgers don't contain beef, but that's another story.
but for our industry, it's actually quite interesting, because one of the biggest issues that I picked up during the reading of the regulations, along with the Consumer Protection Act, which we have an advanced copy of the regulations, many people haven't actually seen them yet, but it looks like a cancellation clause for any contract is being built into the regulations. But the penalty that consumers can pay cannot exceed 10% of the total value of the contract.
Is this cell phones we're talking about? Was this general?
Just general contracts. Mm. So if you, as a cell phone contract subscriber, buy into a contract, get your cell phone, and 3 months later decide to cancel, 10% of your contract is not going to cover the amount of the phone. And the best that the mobiles can hope for is to have the secondhand phone given back to them. And there's no real market for secondhand phones in this country. So, you know, it's a big deal. There may come a time when the mobile operators actually decide not to subsidize handsets in contracts for mobile.
So you're saying it's 10% of the amount that the maximum you'd be forced to pay back if you cancel a contract on the value of the device?
Yep.
So I could go to Vodacom tomorrow and I could get a new contract and get an iPhone 4, which has, say, a value of, 5,000 Rand. It's more than that, but let's just say, let's use that for example. Then I will decide a month later that I don't really want this contract anymore. Or perhaps I do really want the contract, but I actually just want the phone but want to cancel the contract. All I'd have to do is pay out 500 Rand or 10% of the value of that device, cancel the contract, and I can keep the phone.
On principle, yes. But the problem is that the subsidized handset obviously will have to fall away if that is the case.
Yes.
I think the mobile operators can demand the product back. So they can demand the iPhone back from you.
They can, okay.
But the problem is that you've now used it for 3 months.
Mm.
What are they going to do with it? There's no market for secondhand cell phone.
Good point. I mean, they could sell it, but they'd get a lot less than the amount that your customer's going to pay you back for cancelling the contract.
Absolutely. Another big issue for them, though, is this rollover of airtime. So it's great news for the consumer because, as you know, we buy airtime and we have, I think, 60 days or 30 days to use it before it expires. This will now change according to the legislation. You now have 3 years to use it, or indefinitely, depending on the terms of the contract.
Good grief. What are the implications of that of mobile providers?
Well, they have a problem because they have to provision for every minute that is used on the network. So they have to pay out a certain amount of money to keep the network running for that particular minute. So if your user buys this 6 Rand airtime that's valid for 60 days, they only have to provision that 6 Rand airtime for 60 days before they can next move on to the next provisioning.
But surely they can do calculations based on expected future traffic on their network. I mean, surely they can actually see what the traffic trends are doing and provision on that basis.
That's what they do at the moment, but it is a very complex scenario because they provision month by month or 2 months or every 2 months as opposed to every 3 years. Can you imagine having to provision your network for 3 years before you can even think about the next provisioning system. Mm. Plus, they also have a limit on how long they can keep dead SIM cards on the network, which is under the 3-year period. So they have to cut off people who aren't using their SIM cards. So basically SIM cards that have been unused for a certain amount of time. I can't remember exactly how long that is. I think it's between 7 and 8 months, but I'm not entirely sure. And then they have to cut those people off.
Mm.
Well under the 3-year period, what do they do? It's conflicting.
Mm. I must say, I don't have a lot of sympathy for the mobile operators when it comes to the airtime cutoff period, because I really don't think they should be cutting people off after 2 or 3 months. If you buy a product, you should be able to use it whenever you want to use it. I do have more sympathy for them on the handset subsidy issue, and I think the handset subsidy issue could actually be damaging to the cell phone market in South Africa and actually result in fewer people being able to afford smartphones if the subsidy is done away with. But on the airtime issue, I have very little sympathy for these providers.
Well, as you say, on the handset subsidy issue, I mean, the South African mobile industry was built on the subsidy.
Yes.
If you've read Alanod Craig's book, the former CEO of Vodacom.
Yes. Second is nothing.
Yes. You can see exactly how they got this whole process working and how they got people buying cell phones using the subsidy, because until Vodacom came into the country and until MTN came into the country, these devices were considered out of the reach of the everyday person.
Yes.
And suddenly, you know, South Africa has 100% penetration plus, and, you know, it was built off this system.
Yeah. Well, so certainly the contract market was built off this.
Absolutely.
There's an expectation amongst contract users that every 24 months you're going to get a new cell phone. That could come to an end.
Well, you look at my brother, for example, who buys a contract once every year. So he will, he has two separate contracts with the same provider and has two SIM cards for it, but gets a phone every year under the new contract terms. So that's how, you know, so a lot of people do this kind of thing.
That's great. I mean, I love getting a new handset every 24 months.
As do I.
Yeah. Good. Well, Candice, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we've got a couple of goodies to give away this week. So if you're keen either for a copy of Ronnie, Gus Silber's new book on Ronnie Apteker, it's called Ronnie Apteker's Funny Business, The Secrets of an Accidental Entrepreneur. We've got two copies of that to give away. We've got a simple question you need to answer. It is, what company did the well-known entrepreneur Ronnie Apteker found? And a hint, it's now part of Dimension Data.
Giveaway.
You can email the answer to that question at info@techcentral.co.za. info@techcentral.co.za. And then the second prize we're giving away this week is a laptop sleeve courtesy of Blue Label Telecoms. And to win that, same email address, just answer this question: what size is the laptop sleeve? So what size notebook is it meant to take? info@techcentral.co.za. And you can use that email address to provide feedback on the show, which we'd really welcome. But I think that's about all the time we have for this week. Candice, you must have a great time in Switzerland.
See you on the other side.
And please take lots of pictures. And
I'll be updating Facebook and Twitter with some of the photos that I take while I'm out there. So keep an eye out for that.
Fantastic. You can follow Candice on on Twitter at Candice Jones. I'm on Twitter at McLeod D, and you can follow the Tech Central official Twitter stream at Tech Central. Thanks again for listening, and we'll chat to you again next week.